Welcome back to Fishnets and Philosophy. This is your host, Mick Spell-Morrigan, and once again, we're continuing our exploration into the question, why horror? Where each week, myself and a different guest try and unpack this fun question that's on all of our minds. So this week, I am joined by the fabulous Canel. So before we jump into the questions, if you could just kind of introduce yourself, kind of what it is that you do and your kind of general connection to horror.
Yo, I am Mr. Always had a buzz of every rhyme I wrote, and everybody want to know me like the Wi-Fi code. It's Kinnell, flipping international battle rapper, flipping podcaster for Kinnell Sinister Cinema, and all-round horror enthusiast. I'm big fan of Fishnets and Philosophy. Never miss an episode. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Amazing. Oh, thank you so much. Brilliant. So, before we jump in, like, what's your kind of overall, like, you know, connection to horror? And this is the question I like to kick off all the episodes with, as you'd probably know as a listener. But I always like to ask this question because I think every guest is going to have their own unique answers, and it's a fun way to get to know people. So for yourself, what was the first horror film that you remember watching, and then slight spin-off from that, what's the kind of first horror film that made you a fan of the genre?
It's the same for both, because I was always into my spooky shit growing up, like always like Scooby-Doo with the ghosts and shit, like, but flipping 1992 Halloween. Saw Ghost Watch on the on the original play-in when I was a 12-year-old kid. And that shit fucked me up in a way that I've been chasing that ever since.
Okay, it's one of those things that is just so infamous, but I still have not seen it because, you know, I didn't even know it was a thing until I heard about it on an episode of Mike Munster's Evolution of Horror, and then now I hear about it all the time from particularly horror fans in the UK. It seems to be, obviously, it's an English made production, but something I'm gonna have to try and seek out because apparently it's infamous, and if it's made you a horror fan, there's obviously a reason why.
This is it, like, because the whole thing about, like, people didn't know it was like fake at the time, like, and like, if you watch it now, you're gonna see a really, really good found footage horror film and you're gonna really enjoy it. But the important thing to realize is, like, you know, like, the people in it, like, it's Michael Parkinson, it's like Sarah Green, who was, like, you know, introducing the cartoons on Saturday morning TV at the time. These were, like, the actual people that would be involved with it, and like these were people I was seeing on TV regularly. And, like, because afterwards, like, obviously, you know, like, they were on TV the next day saying, like, yeah, this was fake, we're not really dead, don't worry about it. But you still get the urban legends, like, going around in the schoolyard. And the thing to remember is, like, in 1992, this is, like, you know, Tommy Cooper dying on live TV is still, like, kind of recent memory. So, like, This is like very much a UK thing, when you were a kid in the late 80s, early 90s, there'd be an urban legend going around to the playground, like, oh, once this guy died on TV. And, like, normally with urban legends, you go home, you ask your mum about it, and she goes, no, that never happened. But, like, with Tommy Cooper dying on TV, she goes, oh, yeah, that was real. Like, you were in the room, like, your granddad was laughing because he thought it was a joke. So, like, you kind of grow up with this awareness that it is possible for, like, famous people to die on live TV.
Exactly, yeah. And I'd say, you know, as you said as well, the fact that it took place in the 90s, like, all these type of things, like, also, like, you know, pre internet, social media as we know it now, was a lot easier for those type of things to be kind of pulled off, because you know, people can't just go straight to Twitter or whatever and go, oh no, no, we can clearly tell that this is a staged thing. So yeah, no, that's amazing. And what it's actually a good lead in to kind of my next question, because that was a found footage, you know, horror film, and it's one that, you know, was, I guess, a seminal moment for yourself, made you a fan of horror in general. For you, when it comes to watching horror, like, do you have kind of rigid definitions, as in, like, this is horror, this isn't, or is it more of like a kind of a fluid and flux thing for you?
Yeah, I think it is more varied. Like, I think, like, horror's like, you know, it's like a blank canvas, like, and the only thing that ties it together is like the macabre, and like, you know, so like flipping, you can paint whatever you want on that canvas, you can tell whatever story you want, and because it's something that's like impactful to people individually, you can talk about all these different issues without actually showing what you're talking about. Like, I think that's like a very important thing to it. It's like, it's a medium through which like so many stories can be told. So it can't all be one thing, because the stories that are being told aren't all one thing.
Exactly, 100%. And I like the way you emphasized that there, how it's about it being impactful, and what's impactful to one person is going to be different to another. How we're all impacted is varied from person to person. And I think it's, I've rolled out this quote a number of times on this series, but it's just one that, you know, is so true. But Joe Hill, who's Stephen King's son, you know, he kind of has this quote where he's talking about, like, you know, the crux of horror isn't about, you know, fear, it's about creating empathy, as in you need to feel empathetic towards the characters, like, as in you need to care about them, and that's why what's happening to them is effectful. Like, if, you know, they're all just two-dimensional cardboard cutout versions of people, but they don't feel real, like, almost in a way a lot of the later slashers in the 80s, like, you know, those slashers originally started off with having characters that you were rooting for, and it changed to being, no, I just want to see this famous killer kill all these random teenagers in various inventive ways. But you don't care about those people on screen to a point. So yeah, I want to know what you think about that specifically. Like, do you think that there is definitely an element of truth to that, that it's less about creating fear when it comes to horror, but more about creating empathy? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I think definitely, because, like, you know, the films that the, you know, and like other things that affect me most, like, it isn't necessary, like, I'm not necessarily seeing someone who's going through what I'm going through in life. Like, the really effective ones are like when it's someone who's like in a different position in life, or like from a different background, and like, you know, deals with different struggles and different issues, like, But like, I'm tied into what they're dealing with, and then I'm like I look at things slightly differently afterwards. That's the most effective thing for me. Like,
100%. I love that point you make about how it's, you know, you can feel the empathy towards, you know, people are having experiences that you yourself don't have, because, like, you know, they're well thought out characters, and you can portray different types of scenarios. And also, as well, I just think that just shows you're a good human being, you know, rather than like a lot of the people, like, you know, that, to me, I wouldn't say they're proper horror fans. I'd say they're just bigots who happen to be swimming in the horror waters. But, you know, it's this type of people who complain about the main characters of a film being a person of color or being queer, and it's because they're just like, can't relate to that. And it's like, well, you're a human, aren't you? Surely you can relate to human experiences. It's a different version of it, but you're all human.
see this is the thing, like, because I think, like, a lot of those kind of people, like, they're out there, like, and, like, you know, I do see it online. I do see people being complete and utter fucking pricks about things online, but, like, You know, they're trying to like in that particular specific conversation they're having, they're trying to represent themselves as like, you know, a member of the horror community, and I've been down with it. Mm-hmm. And like the same people, they're going on about like fucking like Little Mermaid, like you're a member of the fucking Little Mermaid community or whatever. Like, you know, it's just fucking that they are internet dickheads that are just using it. Like, how many times have you heard this exact story? I'm going to guess at least five. Like, some woman you know is wearing a t-shirt with like the name of a band they like, and like someone's come up to them and said like name five songs or whatever, and they name fucking 10 and they're deep cuts, and it turns out the guy who was asking them like didn't even know them songs, and it turns out he was just, you know, using that as leverage to attack someone, to be a prick.
Yep.
Like it's
exactly, that's what it is. It's a type of gatekeeping, and you know, whether it's
gatekeeping and you don't even run the gate, mate.
Exactly. And they just think that, ergo, because they are a man, they know more, and it's like, no, that's not how it works.
I think it is like a lot of it's like very like kind of specifically misogyny. Because, like, fucking, like, homophobes and transphobes and shit don't really use excuses. They just go out and be fucking, like, transphobic or whatever. But it's, like, some people, like the real cunts, like, that are, like, fucking, like, try to attack, like, women mainly line. Is, like, you know, that they kind of, like, need a bit of a fucking pretense, like. And, I think the people who get it most are, like, people like the Our Bloody Obsession lot, and like the Ghouls lot, and flipping like Hornblood Fire and all that, because like there's some people that like they like to what should we call it, sort of like make out that they're coming from a place of like a moral high ground when really they're attacking someone. So like, you know, if like a female identifying person wants to like fucking like you know, show support to like some extreme horror or something, like, and like it doesn't even, they can just enjoy it, it doesn't even have to fucking like have some kind of like moral meaning for them, like you know, like those people, they like, and the reason I fucking know this is because like fucking particularly with like the fucking Our Bloody Obsession lot, big up fucking Zobo, big up Kelly, all them.
Yep.
Is because like fucking people will either go online saying, "Oh, you're fucking a bad person because you watch this film," and they don't follow them on Twitter. And like, I look and like, I've got no mutual followers with this person. And I would have if you followed them. That means you have searched for that film on Twitter, looking for someone to attack, and that means you've also scrolled past my tweets where I've also supported the same film, but you haven't said nothing to me. So, like, you know, you're obviously just looking for, like women to attack online.
Exactly. And it, but that's, I really like how you brought that, particularly, like, you know, the Our Bloody Obsession pod, and just in general, extreme horror, because that's one of the big kind of questions that I have in this ongoing series, and it's linked to it. But I think it's such a complex and nuanced one, because I do think there are like a strong number of the people who would be, say, the biggest proponents of extreme horror, or not the genre, but like who gravitate towards it, are the type of cisgender white men that are approaching it from a misogynistic perspective, as in they like this type of extremity because they like seeing women put in extreme situations. I do think there's an element of that, but the problem is because those people are like one portion of everyone who likes extreme horror, it's, I think, viewed they're a very loud portion. Type. That's what it is. They're a loud portion, and it comes back to being the internet dickheads. It's like, you know, those people, just because they're loud, it doesn't mean they represent everyone who's a fan of that type of genre of cinema. But the problem is, because they're the loudest ones, that's where the focus goes to. So then, you know, then there is this type of, and, you know, I'm like, you know, bleeding heart, liberal, leftist, whatever, like, you know, like social justice warrior, whatever you want to call it. That's where I, you know, I am. I'm queer. I have to be. But I do think there is a problem, and again, maybe it's just a terminally online thing and it's less so in the real world, but I do think on like the progressive side of things, there's also a problem of judging everything through a moral lens, and that anyone anyone who likes something that's quote unquote problematic is therefore a bad actor or a bad person. And it's like, no, that's not how it works. These are all nuanced things. And it just frustrates me. But after that mini rant, the reason I mentioned that is one of the questions I have on this series, and I'd really like to get your take on it, is I think it's something that horror fans as ourselves have to kind of like contend with this question a lot. But, you know, for yourself, do you think that, you know, when it comes to, say, censorship, and do you think like everything is permissible, or do you think there's lines as to what can be portrayed and what can't be?
I don't trust anyone to be a censor. Like, what I support, because like flipping everyone has their own levels. What I support is like flipping trigger warnings, content warnings, and all this. I want people to be aware of what they're getting into going in, so like people aren't confronted with something that they're not necessarily ready to deal with.
Yes,
like that's what I support. And because this is the thing, I think like particularly at this point in history, like, people's like levels are like way off, because like right now it's completely normal to, like, you know, if you were fucking, like, you know, like there's 30-year-olds now, they was 15 when Iron Man came out, and like you know, now if like you find something that's like your thing that you're going to be a purist on, and like that's all I watch, and it's like some form of family entertainment, you know, you've probably grown up where it's not like you've been expected to grow out of that or whatever like that, which is cool. I'm totally okay with that. But, you know, if like, you know, you're only watching fucking like superhero content, and like, because there's so much of it that, you know, you've never existed in a time where there's not been some new superhero content for you, then like, you're not watching films with the word fucking.
Yep.
You know, you know you don't, you've never really watched films with a lot of swearing in. So like, I don't need to hear your opinion on the original I Spit on Your Grave, because your levels aren't there for that.
Exactly. Oh, that's such great point. No, that's such a fantastic point. And like, it's kind of funny because like you're just saying there are people who are 30, like that literally, like, I'm just, you know, light bulb above my head, that's me. Like, I would, you know, I've grown up with the MCU, like that was my youth and my adulthood. And like, you know, I've always, you know, pre the MCU being a thing that existed, I've always been into comics. Like, I'm a big massive nerd for everything that's like just, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, shit like that. That's always been my jam. And I think to me, it's like kind of linked to being like genre stuff. It's not typically, you know, rom-coms or dramas. It's to the side of that. And that's another thing which I think needs to be part of that conversation, is that so much of what that mainstream cinema and mainstream family entertainment is, like the Marvel films, Star Wars films, all these big ones, which, I'm a fan of, but you know, everyone kind of has to be aware that this is all coming from America, which has a very perplexed view of what's considered socially permissible and not permissible, in the sense that swearing is considered a big no-no. So you can't have swearing in anything that's below, you know, teen ratings, like, so anything that's being for mass audiences, you can't have swearing in it. And then also you can't show any form of nudity or sexuality, because that's also not permissible. And then on the a very weird thing with America is that they're very pro-violence once there's no blood being shown. But there can be as much violence as they want. Like, look at the Marvel films, you know, There are, in any of those big fight sequences, there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are massively injured or killed. But just because there's no blood and you don't really see a death on screen, it's fine. And it is something that's so perplexing. And it comes back to, if that's what someone is just surrounded by, if that's all they're engaged with, then anything that's outside of that, anything that is genre cinema, anything that is horror, is going to be considered too extreme. And that's without even going to actual extreme horror.
Yeah. And then we take that to social media, where everyone's thing's considered equal, and people are saying, like, I don't think this thing's acceptable. And, like, it carries equal weight to everyone else's opinion, and people... I think when you go up in terms of like violence and sexuality, like, it's not considered the same way. Like, you know, it's like fucking, like, it doesn't matter what my fucking opinion on a fucking romantic comedy is, because it's not for me.
Yep.
But it's like, it doesn't go the other way. Like, fucking, like, you know, like, romantic comedy fans are supposed to saying, like, this is appalling, too much violence. It's not for you, but it's like I'll tell you something. Like, I really hate, there's this one phrase that I really, really hate online. And whilst I agree with the principle of it, it's like, let people enjoy things. Like, because I think it's become like one of those kind of things, like, you know, like when you see the most racist person in the world and you look in their bio and it says, be kind.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like, whilst I agree with letting people enjoy things, the people who say let people enjoy things are there's something going on there. Like, because when you see a tweet that says let people enjoy things, they're never talking about cock and ball torture, are they? It's always about like fucking like... It's always about fucking like grown adults, like fucking like watching fucking like, you know, a new Disney cartoon or something, which again is fine, but, you know,
yeah, we're gonna,
like I think there's like something that's come off the back of it, which is that, like, a lot of people have got so into like defending themselves, like, you know, like, fucking stop, you know, saying this thing I like is childish, let people enjoy things, that they've got so into the whole idea of like, let people enjoy things, that when they don't like something, it can't go the other way. So, like, you know, it's like it seems impossible for someone on the internet to just like not like something and say it isn't for them anymore. Like, so if they have a problem with something, they've got to find like the moral argument against it.
Yeah, exactly. That phrase as well. It's a particular bugbear as well. I do think I know where it's coming from. Like, I do think it's like a reactionary element, because, like, again, coming back to a lot of people who are termly online being dickheads, you know, it is like, sometimes if someone will put up like, oh, I really enjoyed, and I think it comes to like anything that's considered mainstream, whether it's mainstream family entertainment like Marvel films or Star Wars, or even like mainstream big budget horror, like, you know, if someone says, oh, I really enjoyed this particular big budget horror film, there's going to be someone underneath it saying, oh, well, the film was shit, you're wrong for enjoying it. So I do think I can see where the let people enjoy things mentality comes from. It's a reaction to that type of online dickhead. But yes, it is frustrating when someone just has their, because I think it's what social media nowadays, it fosters this, I need to have my shackles up and I need to be defensive towards everyone, because every comment is a criticism of me as a person. And it's like, not necessarily. But stemming from that, I want to know what you think about this, because, like, I do think that in general, with a lot of, and again, maybe it's just online, but I kind of think it's something out in the real world too. But I do think that in general, when it comes to people who are engaging with films, whether it's just genre cinema or not, I think a lot of people are not as critically aware of themselves when they're actually engaging with films, because I think a lot of times people will not like a film, as in they'll not enjoy it. And because they didn't enjoy it, they therefore say the film is bad, or that was a bad film. And it's like, well, no. You, like, what emotional state were you in when you watched the film? Like, you know, what was, like, did you have a shit day when you watched the film? Like, just because you didn't like a film doesn't mean it was bad. And in the same sense, just because you loved a film doesn't mean it was good. Like, you know, they're the two things are not mutually exclusive. And I want to know what you think about that. Do you think people should be more aware of themselves when they're watching films or shows, to that matter, as well?
I don't know. I just think it kind of like sucks, like with the term the online thing, that we do have to preface everything with, like, the whole thing, like, it wasn't for me, but if it was for you, I'd love to just be able to say I thought it was shit again, like, but I've got to have this like awareness that, like, you know, it might be upsetting people sometimes, and, like, you know, it's like it kind of does my head in. Like, I do miss just being able to just say, this was fucking shit. Like I don't enjoy this kind of, like, a sort of lo-fi doomcore thing that's going on at the minute. You're skinning my rinks and all this, like.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I feel so fucking privileged to be living through a time in horror when there's a whole subgenre that I don't enjoy and it's not a problem. Like, it weren't so long ago, like, you know, you just have to watch, like, whatever horror film comes out. It doesn't matter if it's fucking Hostel or Sharknado, because, like, that's what the new horror is. And there's just so much good new horror. There's whole subgenres I don't give a shit about. And that's fantastic, because it doesn't affect me. Like, there's like, big cinema releases that I didn't get to see. The idea that I couldn't get round to seeing all the horror cinema releases that came out in my local View cinema is insane. Like, going back just a few years.
Yeah, no, 100%. Actually, I think even the way you're talking about that is just like, it shows that you are someone who is aware of what you're bringing. As in, like, as you said, there's entire, like, subgenre of horror that you just could not give a shit about. But you're aware that it exists, and you're just like, hey, I don't care about it, but that it's there is a good thing. That's being aware of it. And I think, like, maybe it's, like, just in my brain, maybe there's a semantic difference, but I think it's perfectly fine to say, you know, I thought the film was shit. Like, that's fine. That's fine. What's different is saying that was a terrible film. And the reason you're saying it was terrible is because you didn't like it. Because I do think there is, like, a nuanced difference. And maybe this is coming more to how people should approach film criticism rather than just general online comments. Like, you know.
Yeah. They can't be treated the same.
Yeah, flipping, exactly. Like,
what I say in a tweet is not the same as a review in The Guardian. It's not.
Exactly. And I do think, coming back to what you're saying about that mentality of let people enjoy things, I think there is this, again, it's probably just an online view, but there is this view of every negative comment is a criticism of the film. And it's like, no, that's just how that individual felt about it. Like, you know, there's a difference. Yeah.
And again, this comes through a social media thing, because, like, if I just like tweeting now, I think Skinner Inc. shit. Flipping, if I get any pushback from that, it's not coming from people I know. It's not coming from people who, like, follow me. It's coming from someone who's, like, a fucking Skinner Inc., like, flipping ultra, that's fucking searching Skinner Inc. online and found a comment they don't like.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a very insidious element of that. And you see all the films, like, for example, like, you know, I saw so much of that. With, and, like, you know, I'm a big fan of the film, a big proponent of it. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Loved it. It was a film that was made for me. It was up my street. Yeah. But I can also understand why it wouldn't have worked for a lot of people. But anytime someone online was saying, oh, just even I didn't like it, or say anything negative, there'd be a barrage of people attacking them and, like, calling them, like, either, like, you know, racist or bigoted or whatever for not liking it. And it's like, that's a reach.
That's it, because that's how online discourse has gone now. Like,
Yeah.
You can't have a difference of opinion. Like, if your opinion's different to mine, I've got to like find the moral angle as to like why your opinion's different. I need the moral high ground in why you don't like this film, but I do like, and that's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating because, and again, I think it's because of the way social media over the last few years has just morphed into this weird nebulous piece of shit. But, you know, there is a whole cohort of very loud bigots, misogynists, transphobes, whatever, very loud on the internet who attack everyone that they hate. Like, it's just what their online existence is attacking what they hate. And because of that, so many people who would be marginalized have to have their defenses up against that type of attacking. And it means that their defenses are up for everything, so that then therefore their defenses are up when they just see a negative comment about a film they like. And it's like, it makes me sad because we should be able to just have differing opinions on films and media, because everyone experiences art differently. Everyone has their own preferences, their different tastes. That's fine. A difference of opinion with that is fine. You can't have a difference of opinion over someone's right to exist, because that's just hatred. That's different. Yeah. But I think because it's online...
And I think the people who are just like the films or the fucking like the media that's being consumed is an issue. Like, the people who are like fucking actually like, you know, just out to do the hating.
Yeah.
That would be doing that regardless.
Exactly.
Like, they've realized that the way into the argument is by going through the media. Like, you know, it's like fucking like, to be honest, I don't believe that anyone was actually offended by the fucking new Little Mermaid trailer. I believe that people who like fucking like were already racist were like fucking like, this is my angle in. And then like people who aren't so invested might think they have a point because, you know, they're not out here talking about fucking skull measurements and shit. Like, I think like, you know, sort of like using this sort of like culture thing is like an in to people who want to promote a hateful message. And like, I think people who aren't like relating to like a certain piece of media are like getting like swept along with it.
I completely agree. I think that's what it is. Is there, these people already have this stance of hatred and they're just pinpointing something. They're like, oh, as you said, there's my angle. That's where I can sweep in. That's where I can attack. And then
it's I saw this phrase bandied about a bit back, but it hasn't come out. Is it alt-light? You know, it's like what should we call it? It's like the light way, the easy first thing in, like, you know, it's like,
yeah, it's exactly. I think, and again, what frustrates me, coming back to how everything is so reactionary, is that so many of the people who are progressive and left-leaning and, you know, allies, they don't see the tactic for what it is. And that's the frustrating thing. Like, and they engage with this. Like,
flip it out. I think it's something that, like, what should we call it? Like, the kind of like right wing influencers are on, like, fucking where they realize if they tweet a certain thing, then a certain category of, it's not leftist, it's liberal, isn't it? Like, it's fucking, you know, it's like, I'm fucking leftist. I am socialist. I'm fucking grew up in a former mining town during the Thatcher years. I am fuck the Tories. That is who I am. And I see this sort of center left liberal thing. And they're the people who like fucking will see, what should we call it? Some like kind of like a right wing hate figure say, we want all the people who use the pronouns to be killed. And they all like quote tweet and said, you said we, that's a pronoun. It's like, you fucking idiot. That's the point. That's why they phrased it like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a neoliberal thing, as in it's this type of thing of all they care about is civility, and you can't say this, you can't be seen to be saying that, but really, like, you know, once it's behind closed doors, they don't really give a shit, a lot of these people. It's all about performative civility, as in, like, oh, you're not allowed to say that because it's wrong, you can't say that, and they attack the person for saying that thing, but that's all as far as they go. They're not trying to actually restructure society so everyone benefits, you know. But stemming from that, kind of going back to one of the questions I have, and it's kind of linked to it, but it's something that I've kind of noticed a lot when it comes to in horror over the last number of years. And like, I think across the board, like when we take into consideration, say, the mainstream family entertainment like Marvel and Star Wars and stuff like that, and everything mainstream, and there is this weird kind of mass sanitization and desexualization of the media that we're given, that, you know, we can't be shown any type of expressive sex or sexuality or nudity because that's wrong, and then swearing is all these type of things. It's this overall mass sanitization. Everything just feels beige. Horror has been the one genre that's always kind of rejected that, and I want to know, like, do you think horror will continue to reject it, or is it going to possibly also fall to that wayside? And where do you think it stems from? For me, I think it's because of the advent of social media, but I want to know what you think.
Like fucking this again, fucking what's it called? On Sunday, I was on a Grain's podcast, Great and Powerful the Grain, with the What a Scream podcast. Fantastic. Check that shit out. Yep.
Big up.
We were talking about torture porn. And like she said, like, do you think there's a future for torture porn? And it's like, I was thinking, like, that kind of thing, not necessarily, because, you know, I went to my local View cinema, I watched Evil Dead Rise on flipping Friday with a full crowd, like. But I think, like, torture porn was a thing where it was kicking against something, because at the time, like, you know, we were trying to sell the horror films to the teenagers, put the Dawson's Creek film in them, Creek people in them, and fucking, you know, we were toned down the kills, we were selling to teenagers. Meanwhile, the actual teenagers are, what you call it, they're on fucking rotten.com watching cartel executions. So there was that disconnect between, like, you know, what people were seeing and experiencing, and like what they were being sold, and like, so torture porn comes as like the pushback against that. So what I'm what I think the next thing's going to be, it's going to be shaggers horror. Someone's going to come out with a better term for it than me. It's like, you know, fucking, like, you know, like the desexualization specifically of horror. Like, because, you know, it happens in all things, like, but you know, specifically horror, like, you know, I think it's time for to be kicking against it, like, and like, now it is the time. And I think, like, it's going to be a movement, and someone's going to come up with someone more prestigious than me is going to come up with a better term than shaggers horror. But I think it is going to be a movement, and like, there's going to be podcasts about that in like 10 years, and they're going to be saying, like, the first examples were like fucking Titan and Infinity Pool and these kind of things. Cause you know, we're dealing with this non-nudity time and in films, but that's not what it is like, fucking, you know, particularly like postcard. Obviously you're doing like the sex work thing and all that, like, but fucking, like, unless you've been in the fucking same relationship between, since the iPhone 3S, then fucking you have nudes on your phone right now. Not sex workers, everyone who is out dating. You know, we're fucking sending pictures of the genitals around, like, fucking, like, you know, that's what it is nowadays, like, you know, fucking, we all have a favorite, like, fucking lighting position in the house, and we're just civilians, like, this is what it is like. And, like, you know, that's the same for, you know, and that's not really what's being reflected in the media that we're seeing. And, like, you know, it's the best time for, like, you know, Because, like, fucking, I think people are realizing now, for ages, people say there shouldn't be sex in movies, shouldn't be nudity in movies, exploitation, blah, 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 all this, like. But, you know, now we realize it's coming from fucking Disney adults. And, like, people are realizing this is bullshit and it's not, like, what's reflected in the real world, like, fucking, like, you know, you can't sell a movie with nudity now. It's not like the 80s when, you know, you'd put tits in a film because then you sell more copies of the film because people can see tits. And, like, yeah, you know, so now if you're putting nudity or sex in a film, then, you know, it's because you want to put it there. And here's the kicker. I don't fucking care if it matters to the fucking story, because, like, fucking, if you want to do that in your film, you do that in your film. Why the fuck not? You know, because, like, you know, we're clued up, like, you know, as long as everyone's getting paid nicely and fucking, like, operating within their boundaries, then it's all good. Like a lot of people have this dickhead thing in their head that, like, you know, if they see, like, fucking, like, controversial things happening in a film, that's what's happening behind the cameras. That's not the case. You know, flipping, like, what should we call it? Harvey Weinstein made fucking family comedies. Like, fucking, what should we call it? Like, the history of, like, children's entertainment as, like, riddled with exploitation of child actors. Just because what you see on the screen is, like, clean and pure doesn't mean it is, and it goes both ways. You know, it's like Infinity Pool. You know, you've got like Vex Ashley from Four Chambered, like, outplaying fucking what should we call it, Mia Goff's body double, and that, like, you know, there's lots of people getting naked on camera voluntarily nowadays. So, like, fucking, why not put them in the fucking movies? You know, exactly. You know, it's not like we're fucking pressuring people anymore. Like, just get the people who want to be naked on camera.
Exactly. 100%. Oh, there's so much that you said there, which is just fantastic. There's so many different tangents I could go on. But firstly, I just want to say, I really hope that the official coined term is shaggers.
Yeah.
Horror shagger cinema, because that needs to be emblazoned everywhere. But there's so much that you said which is just really good, and I think it's, like, hitting on so many accurate points. But I think, coming back to, like, kind of, I think the specific point about torture porn as well, like, I do think as well, particularly within America, like, maybe less so globally, but particularly in America, in the type of torture porn horror that was coming out during that era, a lot of it was, you know, reactions to, you know, the impacts of 9/11. You know, it was this type of thing of, like, their entire perspective of themselves, of the world, had drastically changed, and now there was, like, this type of built up anger and fear towards others and the outsider, and it was like that kind of bled into the type of horror that we're seeing. And in general, horror, which is one of, like, which is why it's the genre of cinema I turn to the most and I love the most from a philosophical perspective, is because it's the one genre that's always turning a cinema towards society as it is. It's either going to be commenting directly on how society is and showing that to our faces and kind of going, this is what we are, like, deal with it. Or it's reacting to it in a way of going and kind of, like, criticizing it, and kind of, as you said, what we're seeing so much is this weird kind of desexualized, no nudity, no sex thing. So horror, I think you're right, I think it is going to react to it and kind of be going, no, this is, again, this is what we are, deal with it, but in a different light. And
it's going to it's going to be like a fucking, like, I think we're, like, I think very, very soon we're going to see the first, like, queer horror blockbuster. Because, like, fucking, like fucking going at it from the cynical Hollywood angle, there is money in it. And, like fucking Blumhouse, they tried a thing with, like, a fucking Day/Dem. And, like, I reckon that was, like, Jason Blum. Like, he just saw the first escalator, like, oh, pronouns, and that's the title. Cool, we'll make it. And he didn't necessarily get the right people to the job, and it didn't necessarily resonate with the people he wanted to resonate it with. But they know there's fucking money to be made by making something that resonates with these people. And we know there's fucking queer horror people out there. Like, if you look at the evolution of, like, Don Mancini's work, he's gone from, like, you know, like from, like, fucking, like, the subtext in, like, when he was starting off doing the Child's Play theory, to now he can actually, like, tell the story of when he was a kid, like, flipping, having his first, like, kiss and all this. Like, now he can actually do that. And, like, there isn't a big fucking, like, kickback to it. There's a couple of people who want to make a bit of a thing about it, but it's not like when there's, like, fucking, like, someone black in fucking Star Wars and review bombing and all that, like...
Yeah, exactly, 100%, not to the same perspective. And I do think, you know, possibly a part of that is, again, because of the fact that a lot of the queer horror we are getting has mainstream characters who are queer and white. So once we get queer people of color who are mainstream in horror, I think there will be bigger reactions at that point. I hope there isn't, but I think there will be, because people are...
We need Lil Nas X in a horror film, don't we?
100%. I'd say that would definitely pull in a lot of people. I think that could happen. He's already danced on Satan's lap, so why not?
The fucking guy is fucking, what should we call it, Lil Nas X, like, fucking, like when I battled in New York, it was just bumping everywhere. And, like, fucking, like I was in New York, like the week he came out, like, and at that point he was already, like, this young black lad who was top of the country music charts with a hip-hop tune. Fucking, like that kind of, like, mainstream fucking, you know, sort of breakthrough of, like, this is what it is, and, like, fucking, you can't really do anything about it because, like, it's just making too much money.
Yeah, exactly. That's
the fucking thing, like, you know, like you know full well that, like, fucking, like I say, like, fucking, I guarantee, like, fucking Jason Blum was probably just snorted a huge line of coke. We need a horror film to sell to the gays and the non-binaries and all this, like, and that's what and they rushed into it. But, like, you know, that didn't pop like it did. But we know there's, like, big queer filmmakers, like, you know, I've always, like, you know, when flipping, like, Mitch, fucking big up Mitch at the So Home, is, like, fucking doing his, like, queer horror thing every year. Like, there's always, like, all these films, like, and, like, I watch all of them and they're banging, like, so the talent's out there. And, like, fucking, because even if Lil Nas X isn't involved, he's proved that fucking, like, you know, if you're putting out quality products, like, then that's what it is. And, like, fucking, we all saw Hole in the Ground a few years ago, didn't we? Like, fucking, like, I enjoyed it. I weren't expecting his next film to be, like, fucking me in a packed cinema watching the new fucking Evil Dead film, like, last fucking Friday. You know, like, exactly. Fucking, there's probably conversations going on now.
Hopefully. And I think, like, I think what you're saying, that, you know, there's from almost like a cynical perspective, there's money to be made there with like queer horror fans. And it's true. But also, like, you know, I'm a big, you know, proponent of, and something I say all the time because I believe it's true, is that horror is queer full stop. It always has been. Separate it. You can't distill it. Like, it, you know, horror genre cinema in the Hayes era, it was coded, but queer people were there. It was in the storyline, it was in the essence of the film, but it just wasn't explicit. And over the years, queer people are part of horror. They always have been, they always will be. And I think it's just now, and one thing I definitely think we're possibly going to be seeing over the next few years, and again, it's because horror, for me, it always works best when it is commenting on something that is wrong about society as it is now. So, like, for, you know, that's why I think Jordan Peele's films are amazing, because he's able to comment to that Black American experience in such a unique way. He can zero in on it, and it's just so, I just think his films are so spot on with what he's doing. But I think over the next few years, and whether it's going to be like a director like Alice Mayo McKay or someone different, but I think we're going to get a trans like writer, director making a horror film about the trans experience in America. Because right now, both in America and the UK, globally, trans people are the current social scapegoat. They're the ones facing the biggest backlash from across the board.
Yes.
I think, you know, like one of the films that was part of Soho Festival, the virtual festival last year, which I loved, Death Drop Gorgeous, which was a drag queen horror film. Those filmmakers, like, you know, Michael Brandon, give them the budget to make a queer film that's commenting on that trans experience. And I think one, it will sell well because the people who want to see that, like there are so many people in the queer community right now who are feeling anger and fear towards what's happening to them, that they'll react to that type of film. They need it from like a kind of a cathartic perspective. And I think that comes back kind of like we were talking earlier about why a lot of people turn towards extreme cinema is because it gives you a cathartic experience. Like, you know, I think there probably are, again, that type of loud minority who turn to extreme cinema because they just get off on seeing extreme terrible acts happening to women. I do think there is a type of person like that.
But I also think, like, flipping, if there wasn't extreme cinema, those people would still be the same horrible fucking pricks, like.
Yes. Yeah, it's not the genre itself that's to blame for their behaviours. And I think using their existence to attack the entire subgenre is the wrong approach. Yes, I'd agree with that 100%. But speaking of complete tangent now, but speaking of sub genres, when it comes to like engaging with horror itself, like, do you have any particular favorite sub genres that you'd always turn to, like that over others?
I don't aim towards sub genres, but I like fucking like the films I'll just whack on for the sake of it tend to be body horrors.
Okay, yeah.
Because, like, you know, like, flipping, I wouldn't like to say there's something that, like, particularly appeals to me, like, you know, that like, I relate to in any way in those. Like, I know there is for other people, but the fact is, like, a lot of body horror films are just really fucking cool.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's one of the subgenres.
For me.
No, exactly. No, I get that, but it's one of the subgenres that, like, squicks me out the most as well, like, you know, it's in one of the ones that I turn to, because I think as well in general body horror is where you see a lot of the really cool practical effects, like even nowadays, like in our kind of advent of CG being present in a lot of the cinema we get, I still think when it comes to body horror, so much of that is practical, because you need, in order for body horror to work, it needs to feel real. So if you know it was CG, it's not really going to work. So I think from like a being a fan of practical effects, body horror is always one of the genres to turn to for that. So and like it's kind of stemming from that then, so less of comfort, like less of subgenres, but you say stuff that you'll always whack on. Do you have any kind of like comfort horror films, like if you've had a shit day, are there any films that you're always going to turn to because you know that you're just going to have a good time with it?
Like flipping, I did an uncomfortable comfort films like podcast with me mate, like, and like what I've realized is two of the big ones are like Scanners 3 The Takeover.
I think I've only ever seen the first Scanners, so that means I have to see the others.
I'm such a proponent of like Scanners 3 The Takeover. That was the point at which they just lost it. Like, because I mean, like Scanners, it's a good film, but it's not even top 10 Cronenberg, is it? Real talk.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, it's
there's at least 10 other Cronenberg films you'd rather watch than Scanners. And like, flipping it, it's like one that was like iconic to a lot of young people because of the head explosion that happens in the first 10 minutes. And like, you know, you couldn't get a copy of Maniac when you were that age, like, in it, like, so Scanners is that one. But by Scanners 3, like, Scanners 2 is because, you know, Cronenberg's not involved at this point. Like, you know, it's like some direct-to-video, like a Canadian production company and that. Scanners 2, they're kind of like trying to do the same thing as it. Scanners 3, they're off their heads. And you've, what should we call it? The main thing is it's like this Eastern European woman who is possibly the woman I fancy most in films, like. It's like, you know, she's got the scanning ability and she doesn't give a fuck. Like it opens at a Christmas party in the Scanners universe where one guy there is like a scanner. And like, they go, oh, do some scanning. And like, what should we call it? The accident, he's like doing some scanning to like push his mate who's dressed as Father Christmas backwards and accidentally fires him out of the window of a skyscraper. And he's like, oh, the ephemeral isn't like doing enough things for me. So he goes to Tibet to like learn the art of Zen with the monks and also learn some martial arts and all this. Well, at the same time, this super sexy Eastern European scanner is like taking over businesses and that. And he comes and it's the horniest scanner film. It's the most, it's the scanner film with the kung fu in. And like Scanners 3, The Takeover. It's the one, like.
Okay. I need to seek this out then. Your description is selling me because that just sounds fucking fantastic. I love Santa being murdered on screen. There's just, you know, you can't beat it. Would there be any other like ones just off the top of your head that are kind of standouts, or is that the kind of the main one that you'd like to return to?
Resident Evil: Return to Raccoon City. From 2 years ago.
Oh, the new one. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. Like, it's like a good, like, sort of like background watch. And like I've got like flipping like the fastest broadband that's available, and it cost me loads to have it. Like now, but like when I started doing my film podcast, and like because obviously I've got a studio as well. Like, and like there I'm using 4K cameras. I was uploading like flipping like hour and a half 4K videos to YouTube, and I only had like shit broadband with copper wire that I'm sharing with the whole of the street. And like I'd have to start uploading Saturday afternoon to make sure it was done by Monday.
Oh, geez.
Like flipping like I couldn't use my internet like while I was uploading an episode, so like I'd always have to have some Blu-ray on. And like, I always ended up whacking that one on. It was just kind of like became a comfort watch during that period.
Okay, no, I get that. And also, as well, like, I just like a vivid memory because I saw that one in the cinema. I haven't seen it since, but I remember really enjoying it at the time. But and I just have still vivid memories of that incredibly like metal as fuck scene where like the on flames zombie is just walking into the police.
That Jennifer to Jennifer Rush, like, it's just. A little crush. Flipping like that might be the best needle drop in horror for me. Like flipping swaggering into with that going on in the background. Like it just sets the time and the place, like.
So well done. And just like mini little tangent, but I always think like, you know, when it comes to like, you know, award shows and Oscars and shit like that, I've never understood the music category being best original song, because I'm just like, that's always like so boring. Like, I think it should be
Fucking like
best needle drop
in it, writing a song for it, in it.
Yeah, it should be like best use of music in a film. That should be an award, like, you know, best needle drop
is exactly. Like fucking an art form, like the best needle drops make the fucking like scene iconic.
Yes.
And like it can even make the song mean more to you when you watch it. And like
exactly.
Crush is an example of that. I fucking like, you know, it was a tune that was sort of like in my background in my life, but now I love that song.
100%. Or like I think one of the other ones that I always use for this example when I think about it, but The you know the scene from, I'm pretty sure it's Requiem for a Dream, but it's like, you know, where they're literally like cutting your man, and it's just like stuck in the middle of you, like just iconic use of music, and it makes the scene memorable because of that. So yeah, I think that's what awards should go to, not just we wrote a song and it's in a movie at one point or it's at the credits. Like,
it'd be amazing to, like, can you imagine if you made a tune, like, and then, like, you know, if you forgot about it for years and then it was just used by something, and then, like, it just sort of changed the whole thing, and, like, suddenly, like, you know, like your flipping PRS check drops and it's like fucking thousands when it isn't normally that. I had a little music project going on with a guy who's like a drummer in this band who were like quite big in the 90s called James. Like their big hit was a tune called Sit Down.
Okay.
And they had this tune called Laid, and like flipping, like they kind of like forgotten about it for years, and like it was used in American Pie. They hadn't really, like, you know, been like sort of doing stuff for ages, a band, and then suddenly, like, out of nowhere, like none of them had seen the thing. Like, one day they're like flipping, like, PRS checks drop, and they're like, hang on, this, how much?
Exactly. And I think as well, like, when you, like, just as like a mini, like, I'd say, because it's so many times, like, people probably, like, you know, as you said, sell the, you know, the royalty or whatever, like, to the, or the use of the song to a film, like, you know, kind of post-production, like, takes a long time. There are gonna be films that are on the ground for 10 years before they're even, like, made. So it could be that you completely forget that you even, like, agreed to license it out to something, and then it becomes a hit. So when it comes to the industry, I think it's just so much of it is about luck and right timing. Like, as to, you know, when it comes to the genre we love so much, horror itself, why certain films blow up and certain, like, subgenres become the it thing. Like, so much of it is just, like, if you hit the zeitgeist at the right moment. Like, I hate the term so much, but the fact that the last kind of 10 or so years of horror has been quote-unquote elevated horror is because of the way it just hit the zeitgeist at the right time. Whichever film blew up at that time, like Hereditary probably being one of them and stuff like that. But it's just, everything just has to come at the right moment. And when it hits right. And then that's what influences the rest of what we're going to get. Like, you know, that's why I think, you know,
That's why I think Jordan Peele's so important, because like we were having like your Babadooks and all this kind of thing. And then like Jordan Peele drops Get Out, and it's like elevated and fucking whatever, and dealing with social issues. But it's a really fun film,
exactly,
with original IP. I think like Get Out's the one that changed direction. I don't think like we're having so much fun in the cinemas right now if Get Out hadn't dropped when it did.
Oh, you know, I agree. But also as well, you know, the fact that it got, you know, to the Oscars, very few genre cinemas do. Like, not that the Oscars really mean much, but to studios and shit, it tends to mean something, because they're just like, oh, this horror thing is making us money, we're gonna do more of it, you know.
I think like Get Out is like the sort of like the one where films realize like, okay, it's worth putting money and fucking like cinema release promotion into original IP, and if it's it doesn't have to be completely devoid of fun to deal with social issues.
Exactly, 100%, because, like, you know, I do think that is something about the last kind of few years of horror. And again, it's probably one of the reasons why, and again, this is one of those divisive films, not everyone loves it, hit or miss for some people, but Malignant, the reason why I think that hit the zeitgeist in such a way was because the last few years of horror was so bleak and down, and this was just a horror film. It was like, no, we're just gonna have fucking fun, and now we're seeing
starts that off happening. Like one of the bleak ones that we've had for ages, like, and I went into Malignant knowing nothing. I thought, oh yeah, I know what this is, and I enjoy this kind of thing, and I'll enjoy it, and then suddenly it pops. I'm like, yes. fucking like I would viscerally reacting like this in the fucking cinema, fucking loving it.
Exactly. And like, you know, if Malignant hadn't have hit the way it did, we wouldn't have got Megan, which also slapped. And, you know, again, the like, it's the way things, like, again, it comes down to, I definitely think luck, because something just hits at the right moment, and then that's going to influence what we get. But I think it's a tricky thing to balance, I think, for filmmakers, because it's like, you want to give people what they're seeking, but you also don't want to give the exact same thing that they've already seen, because then that's what ends up killing this subgenre at the time. Like, you know, kind of coming back to, I think, a lot of the kind of, and the terminally online people, there is this type of online attitudes, but I do think there is this weird type of vocal minority of horror fans who say we haven't had any good horror since the 80s. And I think that comes from like this kind of like nostalgic, I'm a straight white man, I'm no longer the center of attention all the time. I think that's where it stems from. But
yeah, I think a lot of those people are also the online dickheads that have a problem with the Little Mermaid, like.
Yes, like, it's a you know, that circle, that Venn diagram is a circle. But I think kind of more to the point of like the way things react is like, you know, they would have been all teenagers in the 80s, and what you guess, like you said earlier, with the people who are growing up with the Marvel films as teens, if that's what you're getting, that's what you're nostalgic for, that's what you kind of build your persona around. People who are teens in the 80s, the 80s was horror. Like, you know, yes, there was, you know, classic action films, classic rom-coms and shit, but 80s horror was massive because it was everywhere. But I think because the 80s was a decade of so many horror films that were almost identical, is why the 90s in a way suffered so much, because of the fact that they were just giving people the same thing over and over again, and then it just reaches a point where it's like you're fed up with that, and then whatever they were giving them in the 90s wasn't feeding what they wanted. And it's so hopefully
it's like people being spoiled by the deluge of content, and it is like superhero films now, like, and like fucking like Star Wars films, like, you know, I was a big Star Wars fan when I was a kid, like, and that. But, you know, there's only 3 movies, so I had to move on and, like, watch other things and take other things in. Like, you know, a Star Wars fan now, like, you know, he's got, you know, at least a new TV episode of something every week. And then fucking when it's not focusing on exactly what he wants, fucking pissed off about it. And, like, you know, it's like fucking like, I don't know what the new Marvel thing is. It's like the fucking Captain Marvels or something. It's like the most disliked trailer, and I think it's like, because like the main character's like some like of Southeast Asian descent or something, like, it's like the most disliked trailer. And like the fucking, like, a lot of that's coming from people who've, like, you know, just been into this, they've had this like deluge of content, they've always had their content, you know, they're not starved of content, so the minute they get something that's not for them, you know, they fucking like react in this fucking like horrendous, like a very toxic way.
Exactly. And again, like, I just wish, like, you know, more people could just have your type of reaction of like, hey, there's this entire subgenre of something that I don't give a shit about, but the fact that it exists and gives joy to someone else, that's great. The fact that it exists at all is a good thing. So I just, I'll never understand people who react negatively to something that just isn't 100% for them. Hey, it's not for
you.
We're
in a golden era, you know. We're in a golden era, like, flipping, never had so much fucking content that I love fucking, like, dropping in cinemas and on fucking streaming services. Never been close to like this much new stuff all the time, like, can't even keep up with it. The fact there's like whole swathes of it that I don't like or don't give a shit about, and like, I'm still not sure. I am fucking spoiled and I am loving it, and because I have lived through the times of drought, I can appreciate it. And like other people who maybe like haven't lived through these times of drought, who don't remember like fucking try to force yourself to give a shit about fucking Sharknado 3 because it's the only new horror content. You know, that, you know, people who haven't lived through these times are like fucking, you know, they don't appreciate how fucking cool it is right now.
Exactly. That's the same reason why I'm just like, whether it's all this new different type of horror that we're getting, or on the flip side of my like tastes, the different type of superhero or sci-fi shit that we're getting, I'm just like, it's all stuff geared, like, you know, being a nerd, being a geek is in now. That's the type of mainstream shit. And I'm just like, what's not to love? Like, you know, I grew up and all my tastes are, you know, you just like, as you said, scraping from the bottom of the barrel.
When Ang Lee's Hulk dropped, like fucking like that was like, no one understood that. Like, it's one of my favorite Marvel films, to be honest. It's fucking mental. I don't think people even knew what the fucking like the audience was that wanted to watch the fucking Hulk then, but it's one of my favorite ones. It's fucking mental. He's just using all these weird techniques that have just never existed anywhere. And he's like, okay, I'm gonna make an Incredible Hulk film. Right, this is about fatherhood. This is about having a toxic relationship with your dad, and the Incredible Hulk's just in it, like, and fucking, he's gonna bounce around and jump through the desert at the end, like, and there wasn't a format then, was there? Like, you know, we're fucking like
Sam that was Raimi, pre-MCU, like,
the Amazing Spider-Man films. Well, no, the Amazing his Spider-Man films were amazing.
Yeah,
and fucking, he set the blueprint there. But the blueprint hadn't been set as the blueprint then. They realized, like, oh shit, we can make money with superhero content.
100%.
How do we do it? Like, let's get the good filmmakers in. Let's get fucking Ang Lee in. He's the guy for the job.
Oh, that's a
ridiculous. That's not happening today. And if it is, it's not happening like that. Like,
no, 100%. Or like, it very rarely is now. Like, so many of the big kind of MCU films are being given to kind of like first or second time directors, as in like Disney, Marvel or whatever, are looking at, oh, who's recently popped off in indie cinema? We're going to nab them and throw all this money at them because they did something small, which was relatively successful. There are some, like, you know, big-ish names that are being attached to Marvel properties, but not to the point of like, that it's anything interesting like it was back then, but hopefully it will change. But I can't see it changing. But yeah, no. But after that, really fun and enlightening tangent, kind of reeling us back to the kind of main kind of why horror questions that I'm asking this season. I want to kind of, we briefly kind of touched a little bit on this topic earlier, but I want to kind of expand on it now. But I want to get your thoughts on the whole, like, kind of academic concept of, like, the death of the author and separating art from artist. Do you think that that is something, like, you know, that can be done or even should be done when it comes to engaging with, like, genre cinema and horror films? Because I do think, unfortunately, it seems there are a lot of shit people who've made really good films. So I want to know, like, what your thoughts are on that. Like, yeah, just some interest to see where you lie with that.
It's very much a case-to-case thing, in my opinion. But, like, my general rule, like, if I was to set a general rule, is, like, you know, it's like, what am I contributing to? Like, flipping... I was listening to Off the Wall today. Me listening to Off the Wall on Apple Music and streaming it is not going to cause Michael Jackson to Thriller dance out the grave and start chasing toddlers with a butterfly net. It's not going to happen. You know, I think there's no real world impact to it. Like, and you know, exactly. It's like flipping, but whereas. Like, I know it's the one that always comes up, but it is the key example. Like if I'm like streaming a Jeepers Creepers film, then I'm like supporting the I know there's some shit going on, and maybe he's not interviewed, but I am supporting the IP of someone who is currently like working and like flipping, you know, as like committed horrendous crimes and like been to prison. And these sorts of things, like, and like me contributing to his streaming statistics may well result in, like, if he gets further work, like, you know, he can say, like, okay, like, you know, I've done these numbers, so, you know, I don't want to be contributing to them numbers. And it is like that, and, like, because it is a very difficult fucking thing, like, on an individual basis. Because if you watch a film from the 1950s, everyone in front of the camera and behind the camera probably assaulted their wife that day. And it wasn't even assault at the time by legal standards, but it is horrendous. But does that mean that we shouldn't watch anything from the 1950s? You know, it's one of them, like,
you know. Exactly. I think that's... I think that's kind of what, as you said, what it comes down to. It's a very nuanced and case-by-case basis. And I think even, like, particular, like, you know, the Victor Salva Jeepers Creepers one is such, like, a weird, like, it's such, like, a kind of a bizarre one to even, like, you know, talk about. And it's bizarre. And, like, not
anomaly, because before he even made those films, he committed his crimes, like... Before he made Jeepers Creepers, like... I found out about the concept of child abuse from this old horror magazine called Shivers, because he was putting out this film called Powder, which was unreleased in the UK until it was on Disney Plus recently. And, like, it was this film that got all these ratings, and suddenly it was like, it was on the set of Clown House. He committed this horrendous act, like, and, right, you know, he'd been to prison and been released from prison before he did this film Powder, and, like, people were like, oh, this is a really good film, like, you know, when it was at Cannes and all that. Like, I believe Robbie Williams was at Cannes that year, and he was like, oh yeah, this is my favorite film, why hasn't it been released yet? And then someone told him. But it was, like, only Britain that had an objection to it, which is weird. But this is it, you know. Okay. It's like, but yeah, you know, it's like my separation of the art from the artist is, what am I supporting?
Yeah, right. I think ultimately, like, you know, that's, you know, whenever I have this conversation, I think that's ultimately where I always, like, end up landing is, you know, there's a difference between, like, just kind of appreciating a piece of art that already exists and it is what it is, versus I'm going to continue financially supporting this person who is problematic. Like, you know, I think there is a big difference. Like, you know, and even, like, you know, I just, like, just going back to Jeepers Creepers and Victor Salva, it's something I'm always, like, I always wonder, because, like, you know, part of me is, like, thinks, you know, if it was the case that, like, his crimes and him going to prison had happened in our current social media everywhere era, would he even have been able to make Jeepers Creepers? I don't know, because, like, it's one of those things that he only was able to make the film because it was pre-int, but I don't know, like, it's hard.
Well, like, yeah. Fucking you know how he got put back on, don't you? Because, like, when he came out of prison, it was like fucking, like, because it was Francis Ford Coppola, like, fucking backing him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
saying, no, this is the guy who makes good films. So people are like, okay, we'll get this, like, actual, like, abuser on there. Like I've been thinking about this question a lot, like, because, as I say, I am a fan of Fishnets and Philosophies. I'm familiar, so I knew this question was coming. So I, like, kind of knew my answer then. And, like, the other day while I was listening to Fulio, I realized that I have a horrendous double standard when it comes to music and film, because I regularly listen to a lot of drill music that involves people celebrating actual murders they've committed. And
yeah, I think that's what it is. It's a nuanced thing.
I think my line kind of is like sexual violence. I think that's my line, because, like, I you know, I've got mates, you know, people I work with, people on Don't Flop and that have, like, been to prison for violent crimes, and they're not violent people now. I think, like, you know, Like, what should we call it? Anyone can become violent if they're in the right circumstance, or the wrong circumstances. Mm-hmm. And some people grow up in them circumstances. And I'm aware that it's something that you can reform from, because I've seen it and I know people who have like been to prison for violent crimes, but are now good people and do good work, and their parents, and they practice peaceful parenting, and like would never lay a hand on their kids. I'm aware that that's a thing, but I think with like sexual violence, I think it's something that's like fucking within you. And I know that because it's not within me.
Yeah,
I feel I don't have that capacity. So I don't think there's any circumstances that can like turn you into a rapist if you don't have it in you. I don't think those circumstances exist.
Exactly. Like, and yeah, I that's a very good point. I think there is a, like, I think, yeah, I agree. Like, I think every person is capable of violence and violent acts depending on what there is around them and what is pushing them towards it. But
yeah, you can even just grow out of it. But you know, if you've got that in you, you know, fucking, if you've established it's there, it's probably always going to be there, innit?
Yeah, I definitely think I think so. And it's like, you know, it's even when you think about, like, you know, the fact that so many of the, you know, to go kind of like almost down a true crime route, but the fact that so many of the most famous, you know, serial killers and stuff like that, they all, you know, targeted women and stuff like that, because of the, you know, the one of the reasons why is because there was a sexual element to it, you know. And it's I think that's, once it's in you, it's in you. I do agree with that. And but like I think linking back to, as I said, the question, I do think we all have our own different lines as to what we're kind of acceptable with engaging with and what we don't find acceptable. Yeah. And I think, like, you know, again, for me, it's really, are you going to continue, like, you know, financially supporting a problematic, like, you know, I think that's where I tend to, like, draw my line as in, like, you know, I'm not really going to care if someone loves classic Roman Polanski films or stuff like that, because I'm just kind of like, yeah, a lot of his film, you know, we probably wouldn't have a lot of genre films we love without his films, you know. Everything feeds into each other. And like, you know, Rosemary's Baby is a classic for a reason. I'm a big fan of
Again, like, I'm not supporting him with my secondhand Blu-ray that I bought from CEX. I'm not supporting anyone by that except CEX. I'm supporting like a bunch of fucking goths.
Exactly. And I think that's also another proponent for having a physical media collection. If you have a physical media collection, rewatching something that you've already spent money on isn't going to continue financially supporting someone. So that's, you know, I think.
I've done it the other way. Like, fucking, like, I've got a Blu-ray of something like from an independent filmmaker, and like, but it'll come on Netflix or it'll come on Prime or something. And I'll give it a stream because I want them to have a little bit of numbers.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, we got to realize the power of these things and flipping, like, let it roll.
100%. I think, you know, like, that's what I'm a big person. Like, you know, if I have like my favorite films, or if there's like, as I said, independent cinema that I want to support, I will always try and get the physical media version just to have it. But then if it's on streaming, that's where I'll watch it because it's there. But then I have the physical media collection. If, like, as you said, I'm still something that, you know, infuriates me, particularly with Netflix as a company, is that they don't really make that much physical media. Like, Mike Flanagan's film Hush, one of my favorite films the last number of years, never got a physical media release, and that's now left Netflix. It doesn't exist anywhere else, you know? And that's frustrating. And I think that could be an entire extra podcast episode just talking about the problems of streamers in our modern genre cinema era. But I do think, coming back to that main question I just asked, I would agree with you that I think it is very nuanced and case by case basis. And ultimately, you know, as we said earlier, people are going to like what they like, people are going to dislike what they dislike. I think, you know, ultimately, if you're not being an advocate for you should continue to put money in this person's pocket because I like them. If they're problematic, as long as you're not doing that, I'm just like, you know, watch what you want to watch. Yeah. I don't really care. Like, you know, as in the people who
I think it's important that you fucking like live both ways by it. Like, fucking like, what should we call it? If you're going to be so serious about like fucking denying people money that you fucking don't feel, I think you need to be a bit fucking handy with it. Like, fucking, you know. I fucking sub to a month of like someone's fucking OnlyFans like and never watched it, but like, you know, I just seen something somewhere else. I thought like, yeah, have a fiver, you know. It's one of them like fucking like I'm only listening to like certain people's music on like Apple Music because that's what I'm subscribed to, but I'll buy the EP on fucking Bandcamp.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's all about supporting.
Yeah, I've never downloaded it. Fucking never actually used the Bandcamp app because it's a piece of shit. But you know, yeah, exactly. It's our support. Have some of the money, and like that way, you know, like it matters more. Like,
yeah, 100%. And I think I'd be a bit, you know, I'm the same. Like, you know, if there's like someone that you're just like, you know, and I think it's all about intentional. It's like, you know, and I think, you know. It's all about us deciding, you know, where do I want to put my support? Where do I want to put my money? And I think ultimately, you know, studios and those kind of people who are in positions of power, that's what they will ultimately listen to. You know, if it's the case that, you know, if it's
the numbers.
Exactly.
That's the numbers is why we're gonna get this queer horror blockbuster that I fucking said you're going to get that. This it's the numbers. You got to make sure people do the numbers.
Exactly. And I think there are incredibly smart people working in these kind of big studios who I do think have their nose to the ground and they know what will hit. And it's just more about getting them into the right positions to be able to make those decisions. Because I think once you have someone who knows what's going to hit right, and is going to hit for the right reasons too. Because I think again, coming back to they/them, you know, I haven't actually seen it yet. I'm still going to watch it because I want to watch all new horror. I'm still going to seek it out. But I think the main reason from everyone I know who has seen it, why it kind of missed the mark is that it was a film about queer experiences made by a non-queer person. And I think ultimately that's
not the right person for the job, is it? Like fucking.
Exactly. Exactly.
Meantime, like I keep bringing it back to Don Mancini, but you know he's straight up doing like a new Chucky series that's like fucking keeps getting recommissioned. We've had series three coming up, like, and it, you know, flipping like day one, he's just like flipping like putting a gay teenage kid and like fucking like having actual text as like what he's had as subtext for all these years, like. You know, when you when you get the right person for the job that's talking about it from a genuine place.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I think, you know, when it comes to, like, as a mini last little point before I'll kind of wrap us up, but I think, you know, just speaking about Chucky itself, you know, Child's Play Chucky, I think, is one of the most consistent horror franchises out there. And the reason for that is you have the same creative voice behind it the entire time. Don Mancini's been there from the start. Yes, originally he was just the writer, but then he became writer and director. And yeah, it transitioned from being just subtextual to being fully textual because originally he wasn't necessarily, as he said himself, he wasn't necessarily intending to put it in there. But because he was a gay man, he couldn't help it. Of course it was there. Of course it bled into it because he was writing from his experience. So I love that he's seeing so much success with Child's Play and the Chucky series and that people are just supporting this brilliant, like, kind of accidentally queer franchise. Like, I think it's brilliant. Yeah. Just, like, more power to it.
Like flipping, no one's supporting it because it's queer. No one's supporting it out of tokenism. It's just really fucking good. Exactly. And that happens to be what it is.
Exactly. And I think that, again, proves to the point that if you just have the right people behind the right project, you can have incredibly good genre cinema, good horror, that just happens to be queer, but that's not what it's, you know, it's not what it's about.
Yeah,
it's
fucking representation over tokenism. That's the difference between the leftist and the neoliberal, isn't it? Like, it's fucking like, are you going to represent or are you going to fucking tick a box?
100%. I'm just like applauding. I'm not going to because it will ruin the audio, but I'm applauding because yes, 100%. That's exactly what it is. Hit the nail on the fucking head there. Because yeah, I think it was again representation. You know, I want to see messy queer characters. I want to see problematic queer characters. I want the villain in a slasher to be queer. You know, I want all of these things because that's representation. Queer people, like all people, were multi-fucking-faceted.
Like, what's going on with the fucking kids in Evil Dead Rise, like, innit? Because, like, fucking, like, I think one of them's genderqueer or something. Like, I don't know the exact details, and I didn't fucking notice watching the film, like, it's something I found out fucking after, because it just wasn't a ting.
I haven't actually seen the film yet. I'm going to, hopefully... this week or this week coming weekend, I'm going to see it. I will. I'm going to make sure I see it in the cinema, but I haven't seen it yet. But that's interesting. But yeah, again, those shit doesn't matter. Just people just fuck. Or even like, you know, going something mainstream, but you know, The Last of Us TV series, Bella Ramsey is a non-binary person, you know, and fucking fantastic as Ellie in that TV series, you know? But anyway, there's so many different tangents that you could go on. But to kind of...
Things are different, like, nowadays. Because, like, fucking, like, I found out all about the stuff, like, you know, these characters and these actors are fucking, like, this and this. And I, you know, found it out after I'd seen the film. And it fucking didn't occur to me at the time. And it's, like, not something that's, like, a major plot point. It's just who they are. But it's like, just that's just what fucking, like, you know, like fucking... kids look like these days, like fucking that's just like what they are, like fucking, you know. It's like my local pub, like I'm in kind of a suburb of Chester, so my local pub is like, you know, my local, I see people there, and there's like a sixth form college by, and like, you know, they're like fucking, the kids who just turned 18 are down there, like, and fucking, like, you know, it's like fucking, like, you know, there's like non-binary kids socializing there now. It's like a normal thing I see when I have a pint after work now, and that's like fucking that's a very different fucking thing from like even like a very few years ago.
Exactly, 100%. And I think you know I'm just like, you know, may it continue and just have more people feeling comfortable to be themselves in public and not fearing that someone's going to react negatively, because that's what everyone just wants, is to be able to just fucking exist peacefully. Yeah. So yeah, more power to it, and I hope more people.
Yeah. I mean, like, even bringing it to fucking battle rap, like fucking like battle rap, like if you just watch rap battles. And like you don't know the culture that surrounds it, you're probably gonna think it's the most toxic thing ever, because it is just people saying terrible fucking things to each other. But I'm battling my mate Danny Jack on Saturday at a boat party, like, and it's like a rematch. I battled him like 5 years ago, like, and like now he's like out pansexual now. And like fucking that wasn't a fucking thing 5 years ago, like, you know, fucking. You know, and if he had to come out, like, it would have been a whole thing, like, not long ago. Now it just is what it is.
Yeah, and I'd say...
Like things have changed, because obviously, like, you know, it's the game of insulting people. And, like, flipping, like, the days of, like fucking, if you watch some battle rap from, like, 2012, you're going to hear, like, flipping homophobic slurs thrown around bear, you know, because that's what it was at the time. But you won't now, and it's not because of censorship, it's because the people stop reacting and finding it funny and cheering, and like the people who were doing that stopped getting the positive feedback, and when that stopped, it just changed.
Exactly. And I think that, like, is a very kind of interesting, like, mini kind of cultural example of the wider societal changes and how things are kind of just in some ways progressing in a kind of cultural way, but then for some reason in other ways, on a more kind of macro governmental legal perspective, seem to be regressing. And, you know, hopefully we'll get pushback to that, and that we'll just continue to be more progressive as a society, because the more progressive we are, the better fucking genre horror we're gonna get, because there's more people making horror. That's, you know,
well, horror's gonna be leading the way, like fucking like you know, it's like, let's circle right back to the very first thing we said. It's about empathy. Mm-hmm. And like fucking like, you know, I'm fucking like, when, like, fucking Mr. fucking white, straight, black t-shirt horror fan with a beard over here fucking, like, you know, sees these things and, like, fucking watches these films and like, sees these stories and things and like, has empathy for these people, like, you know, it does have a fucking impact. And, like, I do feel it's an impact that's, like, visible right now.
100%. And I... Brilliant way to tie us up as well there, Canel. Brilliant, brilliant loop. I like that. Very neat and tidy bow. But yes, 100%. And I think, I hope things will only continue to get better. And I think they will. But yeah, before I let you go, I just want to say thanks again so much for joining me. This has just been such a fun roller coaster of a conversation. So before I let you go, where can people find you and support your work?
Yeah, you can catch me. When does this go out, by the way?
That will be up to you. So I like, with this kind of current series, I kind of have a rough when I expect episodes to drop, but basically if anyone has something that they want to plug, I will let them choose. I do on a fortnightly basis. So I have an episode coming out this Friday and then fortnightly from that. But yeah, if there's something that you specifically wanted to come out to plug, let me know and I can time that.
Yeah. Ahead of time, like if anyone's around Bristol on May the 20th, me and a like very talented new guy that I'm a big fan of called Gas Buff, we're doing a Don't Flop event in Bristol, and like normally we do the April Fools event, which is where we do, like, you know, the fun things like the compliment battles and that kind of thing. But this year we're doing Maypril Fools, and this is something I've wanted to do for ages. Is a horrorcore battle. It's never been done before. And we're going to be doing a one-round battle, me and Gas Buff, who's, like, fucking incredibly clued up on these matters, but in different areas to me. And we're going to be battling each other, but only using horror bars and horror references.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. That sounds like it will be, for anyone in Bristol on May 20th, catch that out. That sounds it's
never been done before, and, like, It's been so interesting to write for, because, like, you know, I got to perform for the battle rap people and flipping give them what they want, but the writing is very intricate to, like, flipping, like, give references to, like, the horror people that, like, they're like, oh shit, yeah, I wouldn't have thought I'm gonna do that. Because I've always wanted to combine these two worlds and, like, flipping, like show people the level of, like, intricacy and wordplay of what we do.
I love that. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I want to bring together my sort of two great loves as art forms, and that's finally going to happen on May 20th. Other than that, you can catch me on Twitter. That's at KinelSC. Canel Sinister Cinema on your favorite podcast platform of choice, or YouTube. Any of those ones. And I do a bit of Twitch streaming. I stream horror games where I die a lot on at twitch.tv Canel Yo. So that's me. And thank you for getting me on. Like, and before I sign off, I want to say how much of a fan I am of this podcast, specifically because, like, as I say, I am straight white male, black t-shirt, beard, all this thing, cisgendered, blah de blah de blah. And like flipping, like the media I need to consume is, like, you know, is Ghouls Magazine, it's Fishnets and Philosophy, it's like Horn Blood Fire, it's all these different things. Because if I want the straight white guy's take on a film, I'll watch a fucking film. You know, I don't, you know, and like, this is the content I appreciate because it gives me like shit to think about that I wouldn't have otherwise experienced.
Oh, well, thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for that really kind compliment. That means a lot because that's what I'm trying to do with this whole project of mine. So, no, thank you so much. And thank you for coming on. I'm glad I managed to actually eventually get you on. And yeah, I'm excited for this episode itself to drop. And to my listeners, thanks for listening. And keep your eyes and ears peeled for future episodes of Fishnets and Philosophy. And also, I now have merch, so please buy my merch. Thank you. And you can stop the recording there.
Safe. Hey, that was flipping. I flipping really enjoyed that.